Welcome to Review a Fucking Way, the uncensored version.
Huh.
Clever?
Very clever. Yes, uncensored.
Hello, everyone. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting with you for another classic, and I use that term in the most loose context, event, where today we're going to be chatting about WCW Uncensored from 2000, the final Uncensored, which would be replaced the following year by Greed, where I think the marketing department just decided to have jokes about their pay-per-views. Internal jokes, such as sin and greed.
Oh, okay. What can be more of a joke than Uncensored, the pay-per-view that...
brought us the match in the back of a truck in 1995.
Sure. The pay-per-view where there are no sanctioned bouts. All the matches are unsanctioned.
Does that mean title changes don't count?
I don't know. Evidently not.
Why were there referees?
They are freelancers working. I don't know. I can't explain anything.
They really didn't think this pay-per-view through.
I'm not even going to try to explain half the booking on this particular show. Everything was just a mess.
This was highlighted to me by the announcing team of Tony Schiavone, Mike Tenay, and Mark Madden. And a lot of people, they'll always talk about Tony Schiavone and that at one time he was a great announcer, but by the end he was a horrendous announcer. And a lot of times they would blame, you know, well, if you're calling a bad product, it's tough to be into it and stuff. And boy, was that ever the case here, because Tony Schiavone was horrible on this show. Horrible.
He was
amusing himself, and that was all. And yes, I grabbed lots of quotes from this show.
Well, good, John, because yes, he was terrible. And you know what? You kind of feel bad for the guy at parts.
I didn't feel bad for him at all. He took his own frustrations on the product out on the guys that were actually performing. And at times, it literally made a joke of the match.
Okay, well, I would...
I had no sympathy for this man.
I simply felt bad because you can definitely tell there are certain parts of these matches where nobody knew what was happening.
Oh, and that was certainly true.
And I had no doubt that these announcers really had to make up and figure out storylines on the spot. So I don't think any announcer should be, you know, handicapped that way. You're never going to end up with a good product.
It's very hard to objectively run down some of these WCW shows from 2000 because, in a way, it's kind of like if you and I were to get the schematics of how they built the Titanic and be saying, yeah, this looks really durable and this is a well-built boat. We know the end result here. But we know that this company dies a year later. So it's very hard to look at a show like this, though they made it very easy for me to criticize this.
And I don't know how many people were actually saying that this was a well-built company at this time.
No, they did not.
Yeah.
This was actually, let's set up the time frame here, because this was in March of 2000, March 19th to be exact, and it was just 2 months after Vince Russo had been removed from power and that big shakeup with the creative end of things. And this was the interim period before Russo and Bischoff were brought back in April. So you had guys like Kevin Sullivan, Mike Graham, who made a cameo on this show, telling Sid your match is next. Who else was there? Bob Mould was there from Husker Du.
Oh, wow.
Who else was around? Ed Ferrara had stuck around. So that was kind of your creative team. I think Jimmy Hart maybe was involved, too, with a bit of it. But that was kind of your creative end at this point. And it was like this lame duck period, because I think by this point everyone knew Russo and Bischoff were coming back in a couple of weeks. And it was just killing time.
Holding pattern.
Yeah.
Until something else happened.
A holding pattern. And this pay-per-view, this was such a bad time period in my memory, was that me and my brother, when we were wrestling fans and watching these things together, each month we would get two pay-per-views. And we would usually split them or whatever. And we got the WWF and the WCW show every month. And that was just what we always did, because for a long time period, ECW wasn't available up here on pay-per-view. But it was always the ECW shows that got these great reviews. So come March of 2000, I was like, fuck it. I don't want to watch Uncensored. And I watched Living Dangerously that month.
Wow.
So me and my brother watched Living Dangerously. And then the following Sunday came, and I was like, no, I don't want to buy Uncensored. This show is going to be horrible. And my brother was so mad at me because He didn't want to watch this by himself, and he wasn't going to order it. So he missed Uncensored, and he was very annoyed at me, and I'm sure gave me some uncensored language. But I was like, no, there's nothing on this card that excites me. And listen, this was at a time. I watched everything, but I could not bring myself to part with $29.95 for WCW Uncensored.
Wow.
So I was buying every WCW pay-per-view till the dying end, but this March of 2000 was the gaping hole.
This was the turning point for John Pollock.
I was like, no, I say no to this product.
I guess my question is, what drove your brother to want to watch this show so bad?
I think he just wanted to... I think he watched Nitro. I think so. I don't think he really followed WCW television by this point. He just kind of would watch the pay-per-views and then watch WWF and stuff. And oh, okay. He's a perfect example of someone that was as into it as me, mm-hmm. and he probably could not tell you a thing about what's going on in wrestling now. No clue.
He completely dropped it.
He's
onto bigger and better things.
He was like into, and he was massively into UFC as well, like a decade ago, like 2001 era, like way before it blew up and stuff. Completely out of it.
Don't talk about that.
Yeah.
So,
where do you think we'll be in 10 years? Do you think we'll be not watching this at all?
In 10 years' time, I think no matter what, I'll probably still follow, you know, casually. I'll probably still tune into Raw occasionally, even if I wasn't working here. It's just become a habit. As long as it's around, I'll still be checking it.
Were you watching any WCW around this time?
I don't think so. I mean, I think I followed it up until the silver and black NWO formed, and then after that,
what a letdown that angle was. That was Russo's big idea when he came into WCW, and for months he built this up, and it was the reunion of the NWO, and I remember just groaning. I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. At what year was that, and what month was that?
That was just a few months before this.
Because there's no semblance of that on this show at all.
The Harris Brothers, they came out to the NWO music.
That was about it. The NWO consisted of
Jeff Jarrett and the Harris Boys.
Yes.
And Jacob and Eli Blue.
And three women.
Ugh. Yeah, three hookers.
The Nitro Girls. The NWO Girls.
Let's get into this review. This is going to be something else. From Miami, Florida, at the American Airlines Arena, a big basketball arena. I guarantee you it was not even a third full.
Yeah, I read that the attendance was in an arena that sits 20,000. They had about 5,000 people.
Oh, horrible! Probably, you know how much it would have cost? This was a brand new building at the time.
Probably heavily papered at that 5,000. But you know what? Whatever. I don't know if this was simply the tape that I watched, or maybe something to do with the miking. But the crowd sounded great for 5,000 people, I have to say.
And you know what? As low as WCW was, like, let's put this into perspective, okay? Even at the dying end, they were still doing over 100,000 buys on pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
And TNA in February for Against All Odds this year did around 7,000.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's difficult to compare the two, though, because WCW has had the history, and WCW had that giant peak period. Their name value is much higher than TNA's.
You take away the peak period, but I mean, TNA has been around a decade.
Yeah,
and I mean, they have a lot of names.
But TNA never had that boom. If you ask the random person on the street what TNA is, they would laugh at you. TNA. Tits and ass.
Tits and ass.
Yeah.
So we start off the show with a video of Lex Luger and his new gimmick where he breaks people's wrists, puts chairs on them, and he stomps on them.
And so on this card,
we're going to get the first ever cast lumberjack.
But not only that, you had half the roster here looking ridiculous with a cast on their arm. This is a stupid, ridiculous gimmick.
Ric Flair vows to kill Hulkamania. Fresh feud in 2000. And Hogan challenges him to the Yappa Pie Indian strap match.
Now, I had never seen this match, but I have seen the
promo. I had never seen it either. Boy, was it something I'm glad I have now.
Yes, but I've seen the promo. I know all about this promo. This promo that Hogan cuts talking about the Yappa Pie Indian strap match. And maybe we'll even play a clip of it.
Let's... What is a Yappa Pie?
Yeah, Hulk, what is it? What is a Yappa Pie?
I just typed in Yappa Pie in Google, and everything that comes up is, oh, it's spelled Y-A-P-P-A-P-I. Everything that comes up is for Hulk Hogan here. Hulk Hogan Indian strap match.
So this Indian...
Hulk Hogan's rap song. Another Hogan Yappa Pie strap match promo.
So this Indian tribe, I'm guessing it's a legit Indian tribe, their whole identity has been wiped out, replaced by this Hulk Hogan promo.
This, it's all Hogan. Like, this is nuts.
There must be a different spelling.
It's just all Hulk Hogan strap match.
Okay, there's probably a different spelling. We're
That's
not
too
finding.
Bad.
All right, well, we should play the promo for people to listen to, for those that have not heard it.
All right, let's listen to Hulk Hogan describe the Yappa Pie strap match.
Ric Flair, the steel cage wasn't the answer for the torn problems. The thousands of Hulkamaniacs that I had to strap back to keep off your back, Jack, wasn't the answer to the problems. But when I heard Jimmy Hart on the way to the emergency room in that slow rolling coffin muttered the words, Yappa Pie, brother, I knew the answer to the problem, Ric Flair. The Yappa Pie Indian strap match, Jack. That's what Jimmy Hart was calling for, brother. And now that I know, with the powers to be watching my back, I can box you in contractually. I can corner you in, brother. And if we are bonded together with a leather man, if we are bonded together with no one in our way, as I strap that flesh, as your flesh bubbles and burns over your whole body, you will understand, my man, what the Yappa Pie mean by the Indian strap match flair. I'm calling your bluff, man. I'm the greatest wrestler of all times. And when I strap my wrist to yours, brother, the transformation, as my eyes roll in the back of my head, as the smoke comes out of my nose, the leather will be your last lifeline to the professional wrestling world, brother. I will beat you within an inch of your life, and in the Yappa Pie Indian strap match, Ric Flair, I will prove that you will bow down to me for an eternity, brother.
A classic. Classic Hulk Hogan promo. And by this time, what was Hogan's gimmick?
Beating everybody.
But beyond that, he had reverted back to the...
he was in the red and yellow, and he was wearing the trunks as opposed to the tights at this point.
And how did this come about? How did he go from the Hollywood until back to this?
If you remember, that first pay-per-view, the Halloween Havoc 99, that was the one where Hogan laid down for Sting, and then he disappeared from television. And then when Russo was removed from power, Hogan came right back after that.
Just as the black and yellow, the red and
yellow? Just in the red and yellow, yep.
Wow. Okay.
A lot of continuity.
Yeah, why not?
Russo's gone, Hogan comes back. Hmm. And this would be before, and then a month later, he would be the badass Hulk Hogan, where he had that fuck you new blood. He was like this biker
now, and it's
a FUNB.
All right.
Like FUBU, but... Fun Bee.
Okay.
It was an awesome time period, folks. If someone could ever sit through it, someone should put the year 2000 WCW Monday Nitro on a DVD collection set. I would dedicate a year of review-aways to reviewing 2000 WCW.
I'm surprised Vince hasn't done it already.
I would. I would just put it out there. Put it for free on, like, your channel.
No, I would buy it. If they did, like... I guess they've done, like, a Death of WCW DVD, but if they just focused on the year 2000 and had people run commentary about just how ridiculous some of these angles were,
That'd be awesome if you put, like, this... You put out the 2000 Nitros on DVD, and then you put the 2000 Raws on DVD.
Yeah.
And you can just call the collection Why We Won.
You know, it would be a great series. I mean, they've done those singular DVDs on just the Monday Night Wars, but they can do actual series.
Well, they had that going on 24/7, where they would air the Nitro and Raw from the same week, and they started in '95. And each week, you would watch the Nitro and Raw. They'd pair them together, and Taz hosted them, but never really took off. But I don't know how much of a market it is, but for like. Wrestling fans that were watching at the time, it'd be hilarious to go back and watch some of those 2000 Nitros, because it was a god-awful period of wrestling. Anyway, opening video also contained... So we've got Luger. Who's even facing on this show? Sting?
No, he's...
Yeah, it's Luger and Sting.
No, it's not.
Luger faces Sting on
no,
the show.
No, he was in the Lumberjack. Luger's in the Lumberjack. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Then we got Ric Flair against Hulk Hogan in 2000, and then Sid defending the WCW title against Jeff Jarrett with the Sid soundbite in this video, "You cannot be the master of the master." And Jarrett tells Sid, "I'll see you in hell," which was the most appropriate description of this show. Show starts off with Luger, Flair, and Elizabeth in the back arriving. Hogan is then with Sid, Sid wearing a very undersized baseball cap, with his head protruding out of it.
Well, it must be hard to find a hat that fits Sid.
And to start this pay-per-view, without any context, Hogan just tells Sid, "I have a bad feeling about this." Jared is with the Harris brothers arriving, and they mention that they have an insurance policy, and a black limousine pulls up.
Limos and wrestling, the two go hand in hand, and they always promise to deliver something memorable.
And they always arrive 2.5 hours before the guy needs to get out of the limo. So he just sits there for 2.5 hours.
And you got to get there on time.
As we mentioned, Shivani, Madden, and Mike Tenay are your commentators. And I think when we get to the feedback, we'll get everyone's thoughts on Mark Madden, because some anger towards Mark Madden from our listeners. And we start things off with The Artist, a playoff of Prince.
Yes, The Artist, formerly known as Prince Iaukea. One of the great gimmicks of the 2000s.
Oh, yes, yes. Accompanied by Paisley, mm-hmm. Booker T's wife, defending the Cruiserweight title. Yes, The Artist was the Cruiserweight champion at the time, defending against Psychosis. And they show highlights of Psychosis losing on television 2 weeks ago. But then he beat Kaz Hayashi the following week, and all I could think of here during these highlights was, I would much rather see Psychosis and Kaz Hayashi opening up this pay-per-view than Prince Iaukea.
You got to think of some type of a gimmick based off of some musician for Kaz.
Juventud Guerrera is accompanying Psychosis, another pairing that would have been a much better match. And The Artist wrestles in a dress shirt and dress pants.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't be the only one on this card to have inappropriate attire for a wrestling match.
Well, you know, like, I know he's going for the way, for the Prince gimmick, but, and he probably thinks this is what Prince wears, but he just looks like, he looked like a guy who just came from work. You know, his dress shirt was nothing really that fancy. It just looked like a clubbing dress shirt.
Yeah, he just undid the buttons and got down to work.
Yeah, he's Prince.
Yeah. Yeah. The match starts, and suddenly this music starts playing. And at first, I thought it was a technical fuck-up. But then Chris Candido walks down the aisle, and it's like, oh, okay, he must be involved here. No, this was his debut.
Oh, man.
This was his debut. And how is he announced coming in? Hey, that's Chris Candido. And he just sits down at the announce desk, and he says, I'm here to confirm the internet rumors that I've signed with WCW.
Well, not a very memorable first time appearance.
Chris Jericho in WWF, this was not.
No.
And we see a hurricane run off the top rope by Psychosis, and then a crossbody to the floor. And Candido's gimmick is that he's complaining about the lack of a push he's already receiving in this company. First night in.
He's jealous because Prince Iaukea, why does he get to be the prince and not Chris Candido?
Artist here gets the heat. He hits a super kick. And then Candido starts complaining about the fact that WCW has not signed Tammy Sitch yet. He's like, why hasn't WCW signed my girlfriend? She's the most talented manager in the entire business.
Hmm. Was she about to come in?
She did end up coming in.
Yeah, so they might have been in talks already.
This was not a very long run by Candido and Tammy and WCW. They did not leave a good impression.
Hmm.
Psychosis came back with a hurricane run off the top, gets a two count. Paisley then tries to distract Psychosis. So Juventud walks over and he makes out with Paisley. And then Paisley attacks Juventud, slapping him. He falls to the ground, and then she tries to pull his pants off as Psychosis hits a top rope leg drop, but then turns around and is distracted, and this leads to The Artist climbing to the second rope and hitting a DDT off the second rope, the physics of which left a lot to be desired here, how you can hit a DDT with a forward motion.
You could do that.
It just seemed awkward.
But I thought it was fun.
The Artist retains the Cruiserweight title at 7 minutes and 23 seconds. I was not impressed with The Artist.
I like his gimmick, though. I
think Do you?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of fun. For an undercard gimmick, why not? He was very over the top, and, you know, the match was nothing special. And Candido was an afterthought, completely not noticeable. Why did Paisley try to take off Hoovy's pants? She's like, you tried to harass me, now I'm going to harass you. Now I'm going to take your pants off.
Maybe it was foreshadowing of that tour later that year Juventud would go on in Australia, where he got fucked up on ecstasy, and he stripped down naked in the streets of Australia and was arrested.
Hmm. Wow. Okay.
Mean Gene Okerlund is in the back with Bam Bam Bigelow to discuss his feud with The Wall, who he brought into the business, and said, I taught him the right things, but now he's crippling people, and I'm going to put a stop to him tonight.
So The Wall here is working a gimmick where he's crippling people as well.
He's choke slamming them through tables.
Rather than break arms, this particular monster likes to cripple people.
Yeah, he goes for the spine, not the arm. Up next, we've got a tag match with XS, Lenny Lane and Lodi, who were previously the West Hollywood Blondes, but gay characters were deemed too risque for the Turner Broadcasting Systems and were removed from television.
But they're still gay, this gimmick.
I think they were subtle in this gimmick. This was their repackaging.
Okay.
XS, who, I swear to God, I have no recollection of this team.
Yeah. This was Chris Jericho on Monday Night Raw during his debut.
What?
Because Lodi and Lane both come out dressing like Jericho.
Oh, they do.
With the silver shirt and...
You're right.
And the Jericho hairstyle on Lenny Lane.
Lenny Lane. My goodness, was this guy influenced by...
Or it might have been the other way around.
Jericho influenced by Lenny Lane?
Yeah.
I don't know about
Didn't Lane, like, the week after Jericho debuted, didn't Lane have, like, a sign saying, Irvine stole my shirt or stole my something? So I don't know who influenced who, but...
As they're walking to the ring, this was Tony Schiavone's description. Two modern type guys, XS. They are hip. It's a gimmick. Two modern guys.
Okay.
Was modern code for homosexual?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Their opponents for the evening are The Demon, Dale Torborg, and Norman Smiley. And The Demon was this brilliant idea WCW had where they paired up with Kiss, spent a ridiculous amount of money to be able to market a wrestler in the likeness of Gene Simmons.
This was going to be a game changer.
This was a giant debut for them in mid-99.
They promoted the hell out of
Demon,
this.
The Demon. And they had to use him on X amount of dates, and the big winner here was Gene Simmons, who would license anything revolving his likeness as long as he could make money. You know when you've seen in those cartoons where someone's stealing money from a bank and they have the bags with the dollar symbol on them?
Yeah.
He's trademarked that money symbol.
On a money sign on
the
bag?
Money bags. If you look that up, he has trademarked that.
You're kidding me.
That guy is just a businessman.
Yeah.
He watches life in a different lens than anybody else. It's just, how can I make money off this? So, Miss Hancock, Stacy Keibler, comes down. I think the theme here was that we only have three people on the commentary table. We should have four for every match on this card, because how many guest commentators do we have on this show? We had Chris Candido, and this was number two. We'll keep count.
Yeah.
Miss Hancock. Get it? This was 1999 wrestling.
Yeah, I get it.
2000.
Yeah. So Miss Hancock is, what is she? Is she XS's manager? Or is she trying to manage XS?
I guess she's recruiting them or something.
And XS hate her because
she's a woman. We're not interested.
Oh.
We're interested in half your last name.
Ah, yes.
Han. Lodi says he's sick of Stacy chasing them. And then Lane says she's not even Rizat material. And Hancock says that excess stands for extra small.
Brilliant.
So During the demon's entrance, the demon casket opens with Norman Smiley dressed up in the demon gear as well. Which, if Gene Simmons was one of the 100,000 that bought this pay-per-view, believe me, he would have been calling the Monday morning saying, hey, I want double for that appearance. Tanay says, lots of teams can learn about the unity of the screaming demons. How they've bonded. How they've painted their faces together.
By this point, you have to figure that they've already given up on the demon by pairing him with this comedy character, Norman Smiley.
Yeah, they were kind of bound by this contract that they had to use him. They couldn't just put him on the sidelines if he didn't get over.
And a team in which Norman Smiley was the more over of the two.
Oh, certainly. During this match, it felt like Tony Schiavone and Mark Madden had never spoken to a woman before because they were just, like, giddy at Stacy Keibler being so close to them.
Yeah, well, I mean,
I felt horrible for Mike Tanay during this show because Mike Tanay had clearly not thrown the towel in mentally. Uh-huh. And I think even Madden was trying, but I think he's more a case of you either enjoy his commentary or you hate it.
Yeah.
Whereas Schiavone, I think, was just, fuck this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The classic, I've got a bottle of rum under the table here to get me through this.
Mm.
He was Dave Foley from that monster movie we watched, Monster Brawl.
Right.
That's who Tony Schiavone was at this point in his WCW tenure.
Okay.
Lots of leather in this match.
Was there?
Lane, Lodi, and Demon all wearing like the leather pleather pants.
Hmm.
And Smiley hits a scoop slam to Lane, teases the big wiggle, but then he looks over his shoulder and Lodi stops him. And during this match, Stacy brings up how on Nitro she's going to be taking El Dandy and Silver King for a makeover as the new team Los Fabulosos.
Okay. Something I didn't even need to hear about.
Smiley gets the hot tag eventually, slams to both of them. He gives this pelvic thrust to Lodi, and then Lane hits the stroke for a two count. Lane and Demon then go to the floor. Norman submits Lodi with the Norman Conquest, which is kind of like a chicken wing, kind of Rings of Saturn kind of submission maneuver. 3 minutes and 41 seconds. They at least kept this short. And then XS blamed Stacy for the loss, and they leave with her. And they go to take her to the back. I don't know to do what. And then Demon and Smiley rescue her. They bring her back into the ring, and they all do the big wiggle.
Yep.
The old, I don't know.
It's the big wiggle. That's all you have to call it. I thought Norman was, you know, by far the most over of this matchup and probably the only entertaining part of these four people.
He's a great example of someone who is a legitimate, like, very solid technical wrestler. I mean, he trains now in FCW. You knew him as, like, Black Magic in Mexico. But he never clicked in WCW until they gave him the screaming gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone just, that's what everyone remembers Norman Smiley as.
Totally.
And his feud with Chavo and Pepe.
Right.
He had some great comedic stuff.
Exactly. And I thought, for mid-card comedy, I thought this match was fine.
Booker is in the back with Billy Kidman and Torrey Wilson, a very young Billy Kidman. I believe he was 13 at this time. And Kidman was apologizing because on Nitro, Booker was in trouble and Kidman did not make the save. And then later in the show, Kidman was in trouble and Booker did make the save. And tonight they have to team. And Booker was wearing. He had a mustache at this point and short hair. He looked like 40 years older than he does now. He looks like a different person with a mustache. David Flair's with Crowbar and Daphne, and David Flair's in a hard collar, and he makes Daphne promise to stay in the back, but she had her fingers crossed as David Flair seeks revenge on the wall for putting him in this hard collar after damaging him with a choke slam.
Which means she will get involved.
Yes.
She's promising, basically, that she will get involved.
And then they run through a highlight reel of the wall, just running wild through everybody, choke slamming people through tables. As Mike Tanay says, the wall is doing anything he can to get over. Very matter of fact. Yes, those are the exact words. And injuring people in the process. Because all these guys on the card, folks, they're trying to get over. They want to become stars. They want to draw. They want to have, it's not about 5-star matches. It's about drawing money from the marks.
Selling more merchandise.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we go to Bam Bam Bigelow against the wall. always depressing when you have a match where the two guys have passed on, and mm-hmm. such was the case here. Tony Schiavone. The Wall came out, and this was, without question, the greatest description of a man's character transformation. Quote, "The man used to be in a suit and tie. He has now taken off the jacket and gotten rid of the sleeves," as he wore a dress shirt without sleeves.
Oh, wow.
And dress pants. That was his gimmick. He's trying to get over. Bam Bam Bigelow on the other side, and this was a guy that had clearly lost the passion, I think. His body was certainly not in great shape here. This man at one point was someone who, he was always a big guy, but you always felt he was a very fit big guy, you know, could do moonsaults in the ring, like a Samoa Joe style character.
Sure.
Right up until this point, where you really felt this guy was not really motivated at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Christ, he was wearing like a WCW t-shirt and just like not looking great. They fight up the aisle. They fight into the production area. And Wall hits him with a choke slam through the table with a bunch of monitors on it. And all of a sudden, the bell rings. Did they announce that this was like a choke slam match?
No, I think that was a DQ. Which is
on uncensored.
On uncensored.
Gotcha.
Yes.
This went 3.5 minutes. I don't know why the bell rung here, but I was so confused. And I think this leads to the fact that the Wall was very green, and Bigelow just, I don't think he could even go at this point.
Really? Well, I suppose that's all fine. I just thought the spot was kind of rushed and not expected at all.
And so. David Flair and Crowbar attack the Wall here at the finish. But the Wall fights them off. Wall and Crowbar fight to the entrance, and then they go backstage, and then they appear on the scaffolding above the entrance. And then, Way, in the big spot of the pay-per-view, Crowbar is chokeslammed off the scaffold through the staging area that was gimmicked. And this was, I will say this, in TNA, we would have cut to Jeremy Borash in the back interviewing the next match participants. They at least spent some time on this, and they tried to get it over. I thought Tony Schiavone was too over the top.
Oh, my God, was he?
Oh! I can't look.
Dude, I mean, it was a fine stunt. It puts over the Wall very strong. But Schiavone classically oversells the spot. He says he's never seen anything like this in his entire broadcasting career. A man falling through a crate.
This is a guy who was the voice of the NWA during the Crockett days, where they popularized the scaffold match.
This is the man who's seen the giant fall off of Cobo Hall. Or Vampiro being lit on fire, being tossed off a Titantron. Anyway, they cut back to the camera, to the announcers. And Schiavone and Madden now are covering their eyes. They can't even look at this. This is like 9/11. The best part is watching Schiavone and Madden try to sell this because I guess in recent years they've learned to just keep silent and not to talk about, you know, during serious things that happen. But this was definitely not that.
This was my one issue. Well, one issue. Lots of issues. Especially with Mark Madden, I found during this time period, he very much wanted to be the internet smark announcer.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a something throughout 2000, and I always remember this, was when Jeff Merrick once interviewed Vince Russo. No, it was Ed Ferrara. He interviewed Ed Ferrara in like 99, and he threw out the idea of having shoot announcers. And I remember thinking, what a horrible idea. I would never want that.
Like, how would that work?
I don't think it would work. Like calling it, like you and me broadcasting Raw and like as if
talking about the storyline,
exactly.
And how poorly it's written.
Like shoot announcers.
Criticizing your own product.
Yeah, like talking like a smart wrestling fan. I'm like, horrible idea. But Ed Ferrara thought this was a great idea. And I think this was kind of their way of trying to do it with Madden. And this wasn't the case here, but a lot of times throughout this period, I remember specific instances where they would do stuff like, listen, a lot of stuff that happens on this show is on our format sheet, but this, what we just saw, is not.
Mm-hmm.
And they do so much stuff like that that it drove me nuts. And I found this throughout the show. It was like Madden was always trying to score points with like the smallest percentage of people watching it. And it just like – took a brick and threw it through that fourth wall. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't effective.
Right.
I always hated that stuff. So they sell this big, and then Shivani, classic segue here, says, "This has led to Uncensored coming to a stop." Over to Eugene, who's with Brian Knobs, as Uncensored continues. And Brian Knobs dedicates this hardcore title match coming up to Bam Bam Bigelow and Crowbar, who were just injured by the wall.
Just way too much. Way too much.
It's a hardcore title match. I am going to go cripple some gentlemen in your honor. And the story here behind this, everyone, is that Hulk Hogan at this time was really high on the wall. And the wall was at this point being built up for something bigger with Hulk Hogan.
Everything
so they were trying to give him this big monster push.
Both those sentences you just said were just very... you could take it both ways. Literally or metaphorically.
Which?
The wall, building up the... Never mind.
Oh, building up the wall. Oh, hilarious.
What's next?
I just pieced... I never understood. Did you realize when the wall debuted, he was the bodyguard for Berlin?
Yeah.
I never... The Berlin Wall. No. I never pieced those two together ever until this moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck off, people. Don't get on me for this.
Yeah, the Berlin Wall.
Yeah. Classic. So, we've got a hardcore title match coming up. The hardcore title was held by three people. Three count.
Mm-hmm.
Evan Courageous, Shannon Moore, and Sugar Shane Helms.
Who's wearing a protective mask.
He had legit broken his nose here. Mm-hmm. And they say in the commentary he had put off surgery so he could wrestle this match. A different level of dedication than the majority on this pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Three count comes out calling themselves the best-looking hardcore champions of all time. What a tagline. I was a fan of the three count gimmick overall.
Totally.
I thought it did a lot for these guys. Evan Courageous was perfect for this because everyone hated this guy. Mm-hmm. Everybody hated him. And it was a good springboard for guys like Helms and Moore, mm-hmm. particularly Helms, who, you know, had WCW not gone out of business. I mean, he was someone that was getting a great push towards the dying days of WCW and someone that you could tell was really motivated.
And in the end, I think it helped him, you know, score some rank when he did enter the WWE. He entered with a title and, you know, there's at least people knew who he was.
Knobs comes out, match begins. He delivers the pit stop hit where he takes guys' faces and puts them into his armpit
mm-hmm.
to Shannon Moore, Courageous, and Helms. Helms comes back with a unprotected chair shot, and Helms then hits a splash off of a ladder to Knobs. This leads to Courageous delivering this twisting splash where it looked like he killed Brian Knobs.
Mm-hmm. This corkscrew.
Jesus.
Yeah.
And then Shannon with the Swanton off the ladder 2 weeks before Jeff Hardy would do a much more spectacular one at WrestleMania.
Well, these guys are very liberal with their bumps.
Brian Knobs comes back. They start doing their dancing on their little circle boards, mm-hmm. and Brian Knobs hits them with the fire extinguisher. Knobs then hits Helms with a broom, and he pins him at the three-minute mark, and it's elimination, apparently. So Helms is eliminated.
Apparently, but it wasn't really not everybody was alerted, it seemed, because the music played, but the match continues.
No one knew what was going on,
yeah.
including Tony Schiavone. So... they pull out a table from underneath the ring, and Shivani says, "What would a hardcore title match be without the hidden table gimmick?" This felt like he was just poking fun at the product in front of us. Mm. It was like this guy that was calling a parody of pro wrestling. It's like, shut up.
No, that's what this was. This was a parody show of pro wrestling, complete with a serious angle injury spot, and the announcers just overselling throughout in the middle of this.
They match. Had a horrible track record of this. Everyone point, there was this hardcore cruiserweight match in 99 that Shivani and Bobby Heenan called. I think it was like mid-99, and if you ever can track down this match, these guys, there was a spot, I think, where Psychosis delivered a suicide dive to a chair shot on the floor long before you ever saw Benoit do it or anyone. Like, it's a movie you see a lot now, but I had never seen this before, and it was met with laughter. These two were laughing at this. I hated this stuff. It's like, yeah, some of these spots are stupid, but these guys are killing themselves to get over, and you fuckers are laughing at them. Not a fan of announcers that just completely bury what's happening in front of you. Knobs throws Helms into the crowd, grabs a chair from Shannon, hits him in the head, pulls out another table, and then brings in the ring. He holds up Moore, but then Helms drop kicks them down, and Moore lands on top of Knobs, covers him for three, but Knobs' foot is on the ropes. Nick Patrick counts three, but the match continues. Just lots of confusion here. It's like no one knew what was happening here. Knobs picks up a ladder, drops it to Evan, who's just selling on the floor. Very unnecessary and looked very painful. Fans are booing the match. Moore tries to give Knobs the title because he's the last one left. Kicks it in his face. Comes nowhere close to hitting him in the face. And then Knobs comes off the second turnbuckle with a trash can and pins Shannon. This was 6 minutes and 42 seconds. And Tenay proclaims, respectability just came back to the WCW hardcore division as Brian Knobs wins the hardcore title.
You know, I was actually impressed with Brian Knobs. I thought for an 80s wrestler who is used to tag team matches, I thought he did a good job working this hardcore style, a passable job. But the rules were just really confusing in this match, and everything just seemed so out of sync with all the
It just seemed like a cluster with all these four guys who seemed to be on different pages.
Why did Helms continue to wrestle in the match after he was eliminated?
It was very confusing. I don't think they had any idea what was happening here. Yeah, I just thought it was really confusing.
Not to mention, this guy dedicates his hardcore match to his friends who were just put through tables. So your friends were critically injured after being put through a table, and now you're going to do the same.
Then, every so often, we go into these shows, and there's those little moments of, oh, I totally forgot this guy was part of this company at this point, because I got excited as we cut to Mean Gene Okerlund, who is alongside Stevie Ray, Jay Biggs, Big Cash, and Ahmed Johnson. Big T.
Big T.
I was so happy. And they cut this promo. I don't know what anybody said, but I was most excited to hear Ahmed Johnson cut a classic Ahmed Johnson promo. Which went like this.
Then what? Booker! Get him! Get ready, baby! Got the heat! It's on!
Booker. He was fresh off a matchway at the prior pay-per-view where Big T fought Booker T for the rights to the letter T. And Big T won. So Booker could not use the letter T anymore.
Oh, my God.
This was groundbreaking creative here.
Jesus Christ. Well, Big T was certainly big. A lot thicker than Ahmed Johnson
this guy
used to be.
Swallowed a human being between stints in WWF and WCW.
Uh-huh.
Wow. You could tell Russo was like, or whoever here, was just going through their WWF Rolodex from 96 here of guys we can hire. Ahmed Johnson and Clarence Mason getting jobs. And this guy, Big Cash. I don't know who this guy was. Mm. This was like this 400-pound jack dude who was so big, his arms couldn't even touch his sides. This man looked uncomfortably big. Mm. I think a landslide Scott Putski winner on a show with Lex Luger.
This guy, Cash?
Big Cash.
Really? Okay. Sure. Congrats.
They show the black limo outside, which has not moved. Vampiro is in the back, cutting this weird promo with this, like, Christmas lighting motif in the back with red and green. He says how he sees things every day that are horrifying and wants to do violent things, but he won't look at the camera. This felt like wrestling's answer to Nick Diaz.
Sure. Yes, a much more, cartoonish Nick Diaz, but I think Vampiro is an interesting character and an interesting promo.
He was another guy they were getting behind. You could tell on this show he was someone they wanted to really move up the card.
And that's the thing about WCW in these later days. I mean, there were some really bad scripts, some really bad TV shows, and some very bad angles, but there was a lot of good talent on the undercard.
Some very good talent.
Yeah.
Next up is a tag match between Booker and Billy Kidman with Torrey Wilson in their corner against Stevie Ray and Big T. And I'm going to preface this by saying this is my favorite Ahmed Johnson match of all time.
Wow. Okay.
Booker Oh, yeah, we explained the storyline here of what happened the prior week, where one helped the other, but then Kidman did not return the favor.
Yes.
Teasing dissension. So, Big Cash walks down with him, a just awkward-looking individual, and Jay Biggs is on commentary, guest commentator number 3. And did you notice here, the hard camera had these 5 giant empty yellow seats just smack in the middle of against the hard camera.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason we have seat fillers.
Yeah, there really is for a TV show.
Looks really bad. Booker T here was on fire, just bumping for Big T. Stevie comes in. We see a scissors kick by Booker delivered to Big Cash. Booker, I thought, looked really good here. Kidman tags in, takes this weird shot from Stevie off like this springboard and sells it. Big T then gets into the ring, and he starts delivering bicycle kicks. It's like, my God, I think this guy is overly ambitious here. Then they fight to the floor, and I just sat back and watched, and I was very confused because Big T got all the way over the guardrail, which I was amazed that he could do. I was like, where is Big T going? Is he leaving? Is this a Falls Count Anywhere match? And then this was my reaction. If I could translate what was going on in my head, where's Big T going? What's going on? Oh my God! Big T with a dive over the guardrail to Billy Kidman. Big T nearly died.
Kidman just was just
what
like,
the fuck is this man doing?
Fuck this. And he just steps
holy
away.
Holy shit.
Big T lands completely short.
He missed him.
Yes, he did. He completely missed him, and he's right for doing so, because what was this? Big T falls face first on the ground.
I would bet the bank that Big T did not mention the spot to anybody involved. This guy dove over the guardrail, and this man looked like he weighed 800 pounds at this point in his career.
Yeah.
A gigantic man. That was the highlight of the match for me. Booker comes in. He hits a bookend, but Stevie breaks it up. Then he hits Stevie with the bookend, comes back with a double spine buster. Kidman makes the save. They do this maneuver that Schiavone calls a sidewalk slam. It was anything but. Kidman then goes for a sunset flip onto Big T, and then Booker hits Big T with a sidekick, sending Big T into the sunset flip pinning position, and Kidman pins T at 6 minutes and 59 seconds. I thought Kidman and Booker worked well with what they had here, and I can't say this match was terrible because of that Big T spot. It was just hilarious to watch this man try something that no man that size should ever try and just land very uncomfortably onto the mat.
It could have been a lot worse, but nonetheless very sloppy whenever Big T was in there.
And this guy would not last much longer in this company. This was his swan song in wrestling. But we got a promo and a stupid spot from Ahmed Johnson. They replay the choke slam from earlier in the evening with Crowbar. And then we get a video previewing the Fit Finlay Vampiro feud. And they give us a health update that concussions have been sustained by both Crowbar and Bam Bam Bigelow. Not
tragic.
A big deal in 2000, though.
Yeah,
a concussion. Have some Advil. Then we go to the Falls Count Anywhere match between Fit Finlay and Vampiro. Finlay and Knobs had very similar camouflage outfits at this point.
Sure.
With pants and like jackets without the sleeves, with camouflage.
Camo's in.
Yeah. And Finlay comes out with a cast on his wrist because, did Vampiro from the Lex Luger angle.
This is why this stupid angle.
Guys fighting with casts on.
Oh, man.
So we see a spinning heel kick off the top by Vampiro early on for a 2 count. Finlay comes back with a rolling fireman's carry. Then he gets a chair, but Charles Robinson grabs the chair away from Finlay. And this leads to Vampiro drop kicking it right into the face of Finlay. They fight into the crowd, and then they fight up the steps of the arena and into the lobby. And they tease going into the women's washroom. And Schiavone, boy, was he excited about the prospect of seeing a woman on the toilet. He's like, oh, the women's washroom. But instead, they go to the men's washroom, and Vampiro heads into a stall, and Madden says, what a perfect place to see a urine Augie. Zing. Vampiro climbs the stall and jumps off the top into a steel trash can. Then they fight through a horde of wrestling fans, which it felt like the entire arena had emptied into this lobby.
Mm-hmm.
There was a mob of people. Finley and Vampiro fight to the balcony, and Finley tries to throw Vampiro off the balcony. Shades of Cobo Hall,
mm-hmm.
but unsuccessful. Now, what was going on here with the camera, Way? It was this redness. It was like they didn't, like, white balance or something.
No,
What was going on?
It was just really dark, and all of a sudden the image was completely red, and I don't know if it was the actual lighting in the arena or if maybe something got knocked out in the camera to cause that. I really don't know, but it was quite strange and hard to watch.
Yeah, it was really, it was this great scene, and yeah, it was just annoying having this red.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, very awkward. We see a back body drop to Vampiro onto the cement floor, then Finley goes to hit him, and his bad wrist gets hit into the wall, and then Vampiro hits him with the nail in the coffin, which is the Michinoku driver, and Vampiro pins him at 8 minutes and 45 seconds. Nothing real special about this, but to me, the atmosphere made this match.
Totally.
And they were trying to get Vampiro over, and to be honest, this was maybe the highlight of the pay-per-view for me.
Maybe. I mean, I'm not a fan of these plunder matches at all, but this one had great atmosphere, and the chaos of it all kind of added to the appeal.
And the announcers put this over a lot, and you could tell they were really trying to get behind Vampiro here. Jared is with the Harris brothers, and it was just this brief back-and-forth exchange, and then we go to a video on the Harris boys against the Mamalukes with a bunch of annoying editing effects, like unnecessary speeding up of the video, zooms. It's just like, look what we can do on our editing system. Okerlund is with the Mamalukes, who are with Disco Inferno discussing their no holds barred match, and Johnny the Bull says they're going to break the thumbs of the Harris boys. Very intriguing. Big Vito and Johnny the Bull defending the tag titles against the Harris boys, who come out to the NWO theme music, and then the Mamalukes came out to Nate Milton's theme music. And we get a battle of the black dress pants here with Disco Inferno on commentary. Number four,
okay.
And the worst of the bunch, in my opinion.
Probably, yep. Probably.
This was so annoying. Mamalukes hit a version of the H-bomb, which is the Harris's, like, double chokeslam finish. And they come back down. Johnny's in their corner. Some random dude stands up here in the crowd and just starts yelling at the Harris brothers and pointing his finger. He's just irate at these bald men. And this was confusing because the Harris boys were the heels, and Vito and Johnny worked the match as baby faces while Disco, their manager, played heel on commentary. Let's make this as hard to follow as possible.
Yeah, I was completely lost because who are the actual heels here? Who are the actual baby faces?
Like, I took it that Big Vito and Johnny the Bull here were the baby. Like, they worked the match as baby faces.
Was their gimmick as baby faces?
I don't know.
Anyway, very, very, very strange.
Johnny the Bull sells. He makes this non-hot tag to Vito.
Oh, my God. It was just the most lukewarm of tags ever.
Yes.
No reaction at all.
Nothing like having a no-holds-barred match where you have to make tags to get the legal man into the ring.
Right.
There's a top rope elbow from Vito for a two count that Schiavone simply calls, "That's it! That's the move!" Kick out. No one cared. Vito gets tossed to the floor. They beat down Johnny. They hit the H-bomb after trying it the first time, which they fucked up. Vito broke up the cover. They went for it again. Disco then comes in, hits a belt shot to one of the Harrises. The ref just totally misses it. Vito goes for the roll-up. Kick out. No heat. These baby faces are even given cheating techniques and still fail.
Hey, but it wouldn't matter. This is uncensored. There's no DQ.
Yes, you're right. No holds barred match where you had to hide the fact that you did a run-in. Great point.
There's no DQ, and unless you chokeslam somebody through a table full of monitors.
Vito goes for the implant DDT, but he gets hit behind with a title. H-bomb is delivered to Vito. Harris's get the win at 8:48. Just horrendous booking of Vito and Johnny, who were just could not have been booked as bigger fools here in this match with their idiot manager. And we have new tag team champions, the Motorcycle Guys.
This was pretty lame. The Harris brothers are just awful. They're awful, awful wrestlers.
Yeah, let's just move on. Fit Finlay demands the interview time, and he congratulates Vampiro, says, "You earned my respect, and I lit a fire under you, and I hope it keeps burning."
Rarely do you see the loser interviewed instead of the winner. I thought this would have been more effective if Vampiro said Finlay earned his respect, rather than for Finlay to claim it himself.
I didn't mind it. It put emphasis on the win, and it gave to me more...
But he lost.
I was fine.
Shouldn't the winner emphasize the win?
Finlay was humble in defeat.
Okay.
I was fine with this. Believe me, on this show, it'd be hard to complain about a promo where they put over a win. Gene Okerlund is with Ric Flair, Lex Luger, and Elizabeth to discuss the Lumberjack cast match against Sting. The highlight being Ric Flair cutting the best 15-second promo you'll see, probably having no idea what the storyline was, just cutting a Ric Flair promo.
Mm-hmm. Steals the show in 10 seconds.
Where he just names all the people involved, yep. Says woo, and that's it. And we got a video for Dustin Rhodes and Terry Funk. This video featured Terry Funk throwing a raw chicken at Dustin, Dustin Rhodes pouring hot coffee onto Funk, and the line, "He just knocked out Terry Funk with a chicken."
Oh, man.
That was a legitimate yawn from Wei.
And sorry. I wish I had more energy for this recap. It just, I have no interest.
We still have like 10 matches to go.
Okay.
Okerlund is with Dustin Rhodes, who's holding a Texas bull rope, and Rhodes says that tonight is Funk's retirement match, but he doesn't know it yet. A lie. And calls himself the American Nightmare.
Yeah, this is Dustin Rhodes working some type of cowboy gimmick. It seems like in his short run in WCW, the guy had like 15 gimmicks.
It's been everything. He was the Natural. He was Seven.
Yeah.
So Terry Funk comes out with his hand up a raw chicken. This was disgusting.
Salmonella poison.
This is gross. Absolutely. I would totally refuse this.
Well, he's crazy.
If I was Dustin, I'd refuse. I'm not touching a raw chicken.
And they're blading and, you know. Yeah, totally.
E.
coli. All that stuff.
Funk says that your old man is fatter. And I've brought your younger brother here to Uncensored. And I thought we were going to get like a 12-year-old Cody coming out here.
Yeah.
But instead, it was someone dressed up as the San Diego Chicken in Miami who ran into the ring, runs away, and then Funk attacks him with the chicken. The announcers bring up Beyond the Mat has just been released in theaters, and we can see the rough shape Terry Funk is in. Yet, he's booked as this moron with chickens. It's like they watched Beyond the Mat, and this was the idea of how to capitalize on this national recognition for Terry Funk. Funk whips them with a bull rope back and forth. They fight on the floor. They finally tie each other up to the rope 4 minutes in. This was treading on similar ground to what we would see later with the Yappa Pie strap match.
Yeah.
This was a bull rope match. Mm-hmm. Too many gimmicks on this show. Rhodes gets the heat, and the San Diego Chicken runs in to break up a cover. Rhodes attacks the chicken, which was equipped with sound effects. Gets sent to the floor.
Jesus Christ.
Madden says that's what the chicken gets for being cocky. Something even I wouldn't say. And then Funk gets on the microphone. I guarantee this was Funk acting on his own. I'm changing the rules to this match. It's now an I Quit match. This show sucks. I legit think Dustin Rhodes had no idea what was happening here.
Why not? Everybody else is making up the rules as they go along, so...
They attack the referee with a cowbell. Then Terry Funk attacks Rhodes with the cowbell over and over. And Dustin Rhodes yells into the mic, "I quit, I quit." Tanay yells, "But this isn't an I Quit match." But the bell had still rung. They don't let the decision stand. Funk gets upset, knocks out the ref with a cowbell. Then Rhodes hits Terry Funk with a pile driver onto the cowbell, and he gets the win at 9 minutes and 3 seconds, continues to beat down Terry Funk after the match. But then Funk comes back, and him and Rhodes fight to the back. Nothing solved in this match. No heat. Nothing for the winner. They basically, one guy quit before he went over, and then Terry Funk got his heat back. This match was shit. This was a shitty match.
This was a fucking mess. What was with all that I quit stuff in the middle of it?
I legit think Terry Funk was just having fun and just fucking around at our expense.
Ridiculous. And then the chicken, the layout of this match was just, I don't know what it was. It was non-existent. It was... people don't care. Did they not have meetings discussing what's going to happen in a match beforehand?
It was like they just told these guys, all right, you got 10 minutes, and
do whatever
Dustin goes over.
Yeah.
Fuck. Come up with your creativity. Gene Okerlund is with Sid, does his yell whisper promo, says he will watch his own back tonight. And then we got a video for Sting and Luger, with Luger dressing up as Sting, breaking all these guys' wrists. And then the Lumberjacks come out, and what a daunting murderer's row of Lumberjacks. We've got Jimmy Hart, Doug Dillinger, head of security, Kurt Hennig, Brian Knobs, Finley, and Vampiro. If there was a 5-second piece of video that illustrated the attitude of guys at the time when it came to this product, it was Brian Knobs with his wrist in a cast slapping the fans' hands on his way to the ring.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
No one gave a shit about any of this.
Every single one of these wrestlers had a cast on their arm, including Doug Dillinger. It just looked completely ridiculous for all of these men, first of all, to wear casts on their arms, and secondly, to be continuing their angles and wrestling on these shows with a cast on your arm. What an inconvenience. We're going to need your help to put over this guy, Lex Luger. We're going to have you wrestle with a cast on for a month.
So Lex Luger gets on the mic, and he has hired his own cast, Lumberjacks. And out come Big T, Stevie Ray, Big Cash, the Harris Brothers, and... just for the hell of it, Hugh Morris, who are all wearing casts as well, though their wrists have not been broken. And Mark Madden says, what dedication! These guys broke their wrists just to help Lex Luger. This was the worst.
Classic example of a guy just making fun of this show.
Oh.
Thank you for doing our job for us, Mark Madden.
What dedication! They broke their wrists to help Lex.
God damn it.
Okay. Just picture a vignette of these guys breaking their own wrists.
Yeah, hilarious.
Oh, so this led to the first and last cast Lumberjack match with Lex Luger and Sting. Oh, the big spot here was Luger getting beaten down by the babyfaces. Tank Abbott just randomly walks down to the ringside area, walks up to Doug Dillinger, smiles at him, and knocks him out. And then he smiles and walks to the back. What was this?
This was awesome, is what it was. If this was awesome, if you're a fan of, I don't know, random comedy, if you're a fan of, like, Robot Chicken, I guess, and, like, shit like that, this show is just full of the most random occurrences.
So... this leads to the babyface and heel Lumberjacks getting into a fight with their 10 men and 10 available arms, fighting to the back about 3 minutes into this Lumberjack match.
You just naturally fight.
It was like a magnet was just pulling them to the back.
Yeah, you just naturally go to the back.
And Vampiro was the only Lumberjack that remained. So Ric Flair did a run-in with a chair. And Vampiro fights with him. Flair comes in, trying to chop Sting. Sting makes his own comeback, splashes Flair, gives him a hip toss and a drop kick to the floor.
Oh my god, Jimmy Hart had a cast on.
Yes, Jimmy Hart, who would come into play later on here. We see a Stinger splash to Luger, but then Elizabeth hits him. Vampiro grabs, a bat here? Ugh. Jimmy Hart pulls Elizabeth away. Yeah, sorry, Jimmy Hart had a weightlifting belt. He grabs Elizabeth, and he takes her to the back as he holds a belt above Elizabeth. Like, shut up, or I'll whip you.
Yes, yes.
This was and he was the babyface.
It was interesting to hear the announcers defend this.
This finish sucked. Lex Luger put Sting in the torture rack. Charles Robinson sees the torture rack. There's no one at ringside, but he turns his back to Luger and Sting so that Vampiro can run into the ring, hit Luger with a bat to the ribs, and Sting gets off, hits the Scorpion Death Drop. Charles Robinson makes another 180, turning around, and he covers the pinfall at 7:01, and Sting and Vampiro hug. And Tenay proclaims a new alliance between the brothers in paint, Sting and Vampiro. What an endorsement.
God damn. So much wrong with this finish. Where do we begin? First of all, why the need to hide this on an unsanctioned no DQ match show? Unless this was in fact a DQ match, then if that was the case, then what was with all the run-ins beforehand that Robinson saw? And secondly, this attack was completely unprovoked. Why did the babyface help Sting by cheating to win this match?
It was just unjust. I hated this.
Let's move on. I want to finish this up.
Feels like there's so many matches.
This is a depressing show.
Gene Okerlund is with Tank Abbott, and Tank was upset because Doug Dillinger fined him. He says, "You want to take money from me? I'm going to punch you."
Okay.
Get a video for Sid and Jarrett, and then they open the door for the limo, but they cut away. Why wouldn't they keep the camera on the limo? They had been staked out there all night long.
You're running out of time on the show.
And then Tony Schiavone announced, "There's been a change in the format." And Sid is in his locker room, sitting down. And Mike Graham, the producer, walks in and says, "Hey, Sid, you're up next." Sid says, "Are you sure?" "Yeah, man." "Oh, shoot." And he hurries. He grabs his title and runs. He's got a match.
This is great. This
acting at its finest.
The same guy who cuts these intense promos.
"Oh, shoot."
"Oh, no. Are you sure?" "Oh, no. Okay,
oh,
I better
Jesus.
Go.
Oh, Michael Buffer was dragged to this event. Probably got the highest payout of anyone on this card.
Sure.
And Jeff Jarrett comes out with his hookers, Tylene Buck, Medasia, and some other chick. And Jarrett gets on the mic. This was perplexing. Says, "Do you guys want to see some skin?" And he says, "Once I win the title tonight, these women will strip for you." And Tony Schiavone said, "Wow, now I want to see Jeff Jarrett win the match. As did probably any fan in this arena. What a great setup for your babyface versus heel showdown." Yeah. What a stupid promo to cut.
Yeah.
So dumb.
It was ridiculous.
It's not like anyone cared, but just mind-boggling. Like, what kind of reaction would you want here? Do you want people to boo Sid as he wins? So, Sid and Jeff Jarrett. Sid teases a choke slam early, sends him to the floor, get a scoop slam onto the announce table, and then he pours water on the Jeff Jarrett. The Harris boys run down. They attack Sid. Gets sent back to the ring as Jarrett gets the heat, as the women start playing to the audience as if they're going to take their shirts off.
Sure.
Oh, were these...
They're heels.
Were these fans upset at the heels. Jarrett puts a sleeper on Sid, and my arm went down 3 times. Sends Jarrett into the title belt, which is held by one of the Harris brothers on the apron, but Nick Patrick is distracted, and Jarrett kicks out. We get a rough bump. Jarrett breaks a guitar on Sid's head, and then the heel referee Slick Johnson comes out, but in a great moment, Hulk Hogan is right behind him, and everyone sees this, but unfortunately, Hogan was too early coming out for his cue because it was supposed to be a big near-fall spot, and then Hogan would yank Slick Johnson out, but instead everyone saw Hogan right behind Slick Johnson, so Slick came in to count 3, Hogan pulled him out at 2, and then Hogan attacks Jarrett, knocks down the Harris brothers, gives a leg drop to Jeff Jarrett, and then he pulls the WCW World Champion on top of Jarrett And Sid wakes up the winner, keeping his title after 7.5 minutes. And then Scott Steiner runs in, breaks a guitar onto Hogan, and Steiner was the long mystery man in that limo. Mm-hmm. Oh, what drama.
And he missed his cue completely. He was supposed to be the insurance policy for Jeff Jarrett, and he just completely... He looked like...
What a horrible insurance policy.
He looked like a terrible idiot. All right. Another very convoluted finish.
So after the big insurance policy laid out Hogan, Hogan got right back up. Mark Madden begs someone to kill Hulkamania here as Sid makes a comeback and choke slams the Harris brothers. But then Ric Flair runs down as Hogan is down, and the match, the Yappa Pie Indian Strap match, just starts. This was the ECW influence WCW had at the time.
Yeah, this is all
an impromptu segue to the next match.
This is just all unsanctioned.
Saved us another video package.
Yeah.
This was great. There was a sign on the against the hard camera that simply read, "I'm going to WrestleMania." Jimmy Hart walks down, and boy, did he look upset here, carrying a weightlifting belt with his broken wrist. And Flair and Hogan fight on the floor. Hogan is no-selling the chops. And then he's chopping Flair himself. Flair gets the advantage as he attacks the ribs of Hulk Hogan. Flair at one point puts the strap into Hogan's mouth and yanks back. But Hogan comes back with punches. He's biting Flair in the corner. Flair gets tossed off the top rope. And then he climbs to the top, gets thrown off. And Mark Madden says... Man, the last time Rick hit that move was the 83 Starrcade against Harley Race. I think he should give up on that top rope maneuver. Jimmy Hart starts whipping Ric Flair. Rick is bleeding. Hogan starts punching him on the ramp. And then Luger comes out with a chair shot to Hogan's head, so Hogan can now bleed. Flair gets the advantage in the ring, attacks the knee of Hogan. Flair hits 3 turnbuckles as he's going around to... hit the 4 to try and win the match. Then he grabs these brass knucks to punch Hogan with, then goes for a pinfall, but they've established you cannot cover a man. This is what the announcers tell us, but Mickey J begins to cover anyway with Hogan kicking out at 2. Schiavone then states, "You can't pin someone, but you can kick out." What? You're allowed to kick out, but you can't cover someone.
Oh,
God damn it. Hogan starts to Hulk up, hits the big boot. He goes around. He hits 3 turnbuckles. But then Luger runs in. Luger takes the big boot. So then Hogan pins Ric Flair. They hit the bell. Hogan's music plays. And then he hits the 4th turnbuckle. He might as well have just... pulled his pants down and took a shit on Flair and Luger. That would have been, I think, the only more burying he could do here. And this show went off with the most appropriate call by Mark Madden stating, quote, "WCW is firmly in control by Hulk Hogan." Wow.
Oh,
what a horrible show. I hated this show, Way. It was more painful to review than it was to watch.
Yeah,
had to
really,
relive this.
It really was. This was this finish to this main event, this entire main event.
Ric Flair, I mean,
completely ridiculous.
Listen, a lot of people get on guys that are, you know, too political. I'm gonna get on Ric Flair for not being political enough in his career. He just let anything go. He just would be a victim of any situation. Like, listen, no, this is stupid.
Yeah, but he fucked up too. Why would he go for a cover in this Yappa Pie
strap
match?
Hogan beat him twice here and laid out Luger, who you'd been building up for. Okay. Not that I am a proponent of protecting Luger. But
this finish was not supposed to be this way. He was supposed to touch the 4 corners, and that was supposed to be the finish. They just fucked up, and they thought somehow that he just instinctively went for a pin, and the referee stupidly counted for the pin.
Mind-boggling show. And this was this pay-per-view. This was your big match coming out. It was Hulk Hogan and The Wall. That was what they wanted to build
anyway,
to.
Anyway, this show, a clear example of just how poor the communication was backstage in the dying days of WCW.
Oh, how could you order another show after paying for this?
If you like train wrecks, then absolutely.
Oh, Lord. So, I give this negative 5 out of 10.
I give this a 1 out of 10. It was, that one is really, I still have some nostalgia for some of these characters, you know. But, fuck, man. Shivani on the show.
He was horrible.
A classic example of overselling and overcompensating Tony Schiavone.
I thought Tanay tried, but it just wasn't enough. I mean, no one was into this. So, a brutal pay-per-view.
That was a lot. Oh,
man. That is a show that it was bad watching, and it was just as bad reviewing.
Mm-hmm.
So, my goodness. It was depressing on top of it that it was like, this is 2000. And this show, it was like, Hulk Hogan is the guy we got to build around. Mm. He was the biggest guy on this show. Hey, he was the biggest star.
12 years later, things aren't so different.
Not really. So let's see what you guys thought. If someone can defend Uncensored, let's see about this. You want to start us off, Wei?
Yes. David Goebel. This is one of those shows that's so terrible and cheesy that it becomes awesome. From the Apple Pie Indian Death Straptation to Madden's commentary to Funk's Fisted Raw Chicken, it all has a special place in my heart. OWCW, how I miss you.
Lee Russell, you could tell it was the end. The entire card was a waste of time. How many people were in that crowd? A couple thousand? And how many of those were allowed to just walk in for free? There were way too many matches on the card, and most of them featured mid-card feuds no one cared about and great talent being wasted. Then your upper card and main event featured a combo of both good and bad workers and even worse feuds. It's sort of sad that Norman Smiley only got over as a comedy character. He always reminded me of Steven Regal. His in-ring style just was never properly taught to the crowd. He was a really good worker whose career highlights in North America consisted of simulating sodomy and screaming when being hit by trash cans and other international objects. I'm amazed Ric Flair managed to salvage his career after this and have a really good run in the WWE. I'm horrified that Hogan still has a career. This pay-per-view sucked harder than a black hole. 0 out of 10.
Rich Bergman, holy shit. It seems like someone at WCW had watched Heroes of Wrestling a year before and thought, this is great. We should do our own pay-per-view like this. This was bad. A highlight for me was at the beginning of the Funk and Rhodes match when the guy in the chicken costume comes out and the tone in Shivani's voice when he says, we've seen everything. Like he was so sick of this and wanted to say, get me a bottle of whiskey and my paycheck so I can get the hell out of here. To try to end this post on a positive note, I will give Terry Funk credit. Despite all the stupid gimmick crap, he outperformed most of the roster in the ring. Pretty impressive given he was 87 years old. Or maybe that is just more of a jab at everyone else. Overall, I give it a 1.5 out of 10, simply because Rhodes and Funk was alright, and Shivani's tone made me laugh.
Oh, well, Shivani made me laugh. Alright, Alan Gaynor, I'm generally able to name a few matches from any WWE or WCW pay-per-view in history, but I somehow totally wiped this event out of my mind. I've heard of piping in cheers before, but it sounded like WCW was piping in groans in the latter stages of the Knobs match. Speaking of that match, why can you hit people with garbage cans, fire extinguishers, and pin them outside, but not pin them with their foot under the rope? As much as people criticize Russo, the period between when he left and when he returned a few weeks after this were far worse, and far too much Ahmed Johnson in main events featuring the Harris brothers. So yes, Russo did temporarily improve WCW. I watched NWA and WCW from 85 through 2001, and the January to April 2000 period was by far their worst, and that is saying something.
Josh Kachenko, this was the first review away pay-per-view I couldn't finish, not even fast-forwarding. I applaud you guys for sitting through it. 30 shit stains out of 10. Minus 30.
Oh, wow. Eddie Miguez, WCW was in modern-day TNA mode at this point, with mostly worthless angles, the occasional exciting but still raw talent like Vampiro and Billy Kidman filling up the mid-card. I recall going to a Thunder in Philadelphia about a month before this pay-per-view. The infamous one, where Scott Hall and Jeff Jarrett got into a fight in the back, and thus the show started late, and Three Counts theme music, which was one of several songs played before the show on the speakers, was mysteriously left on and played 6 times in a row during the delay. Also, the Demon's sarcophagus, that's a big word, was stuck and wouldn't open, and there was a 15-minute delay getting him out of it. That's wow. WCW at this time. Uncensored 2000 was a bunch of wrestlers competing that no one cared about and a tired, dull double main event that couldn't touch what WWF's roster was delivering at the time. Uncensored was another filler show until the Hogan-Sid rematch in April that never happened. Even the Mamalukes, who were going over and showed promise, were beat by the Harris brothers. This was a horrendous show, save for Miss Hancock appearing and Ric Flair trying his best.
What's that Scott Hall story?
I don't know the deal there. Probably one of many, many backstage issues involving
Because Scott Hall was actually in the main event in the prior pay-per-view at Super Brawl, and I guess
He had to go for, I think it was neck surgery.
Huh.
He injured his neck around this time.
Okay. Joey Howell. Wow, this show was horrible. That's 2 hours of my life I want back, and I blame Vince Russo. It's sad to see what WCW was reduced to at this point with gimmicks like The Artist, The Demon, and Screamin' Norman Smiley, The Wall, Crowbar, Three Count, Harlem Heat 2000, Big T and Stevie Ray, the Mamalukes, Dustin, not as fat as his dad, Rhodes. And we can't forget about Slapnuts, Jeff Jarrett. I can't believe Brian Knobs beat four men in one night, Three Count and Vampiro. That's what I seriously thought until I realized it was Finlay in Brian Knobs' gear cutting the promo at the end of his match. The Artist was the dumbest shit I've ever seen. Did someone think that would actually get over? Anyway, this is a bad show that I regret watching. 2.5 out of 10.
All right, let's move on. In fairness, this was not Russo during this period. David Warden, so sad to watch this. It's obvious that this company was not fit to put shows on the air, let alone on pay-per-view at this time, but I still think pro wrestling would be much stronger today had WCW survived in some way, even if Vince had had to prop it up for a while it reestablished itself. The really sad thing is how many of the talent on and off screen in WCW were happy to take the paychecks and keep their mouths shut during this period, presumably thinking the money would keep rolling in forever. What a waste of some great talent. 2 out of 10, and that's being generous.
Jonathan Pine, this pay-per-view was a hard one to get through. The entire first half of the show sucked, completely forgettable. Kidman versus Harlem Heat was an okay match. Got me a little interested. The show picked up for me during the Dustin Rhodes versus Funk match, and on this lackluster card that would have to be my match of the night. The Sting match was the only thing that is sure, for sure, compared... Sorry, the Sting match was one thing... Okay, I don't get any of this. Let's move on.
All right, we will... Oh, shit, I just hit refresh.
Okay, I'll go to the next
one. All right.
Peter Smiloff. After watching this, I wish I had been knocked out with a chicken. When I first downloaded this, a big regret now, I thought I had mistakenly downloaded an episode of TNA with Jarrett and the announcers referring to some kind of insurance Jarrett had and then shown shots of a limo. I had a difficult time remembering the majority of these storylines, and the vignettes and promos didn't help, all coming in too fast and too choppy. I couldn't even figure out who were the faces or heels. Things that stood out to me. David Flair and Crowbar running around the arena with neck braces on. Ahmed Johnson stepping over the barricade so he could do a running jump over to hit Kidman. Hogan and Flair pinning each other when they needed to hit all four turnbuckles. And Mark Madden's awful commentary, which I kept thinking, Michael Cole used to work for WCW? You could tell how far this company fell. If you tuned into this pay-per-view in the middle, you might have thought you were watching a bad edition of Nitro due to the production's costs. I guess all the money went into the bull rope, strap, and chicken suit and all the trash that they used in the hardcore match. 1 out of 10.
Let's go to Danny Kovatrinik. I commend John and Way for being able to sit through this god-awful piece of crap that WCW had the audacity to call a pay-per-view. I was so sick of it within the first 30 minutes that I considered throwing in the towel and turning it off. But then I thought to myself that if John and Way can sit through bad shit like this week after week, I can sit through this piece of shit. Everything about this show is forgettable. The matches, the storylines, etc. I still get a laugh at listening to bad Tony Schiavone commentary, but by the end of this show, I want to pour liquid drain cleaner down Mark Madden's throat. And I didn't realize you could win a strap match without touching all four corners and going for the pin. Now that he's done with TNA, I hope that we've heard the last of Vince Russo in pro wrestling. I give the show a 1 out of 10, and only because it's not Uncensored 95.
Dennis Amaya, this had to be one of the hardest wrestling shows that I attempted to get through. I say attempted as I couldn't handle the Sting Luger match and stopped watching. This is one of the worst shows ever, and a clear indicator that this company was going to die soon. It's amazing to see how one of the best divisions in pro wrestling, in the cruiserweight division, had been dragged down to such lows. It's also amazing to see that the best workers on the show were able to look completely stupid. Psychosis was made to look like the biggest jobber, and Hoovy was made to look like an idiot manager. Prince is the worst cruiserweight champion in history. The rest of the show was utter shit. Was there a need to have four guest commentators? They all sucked, as did the regular commentators. It sounded so unnatural to hear Tenay say some of the shit he said. Mark Madden makes Cole look like JR at his peak. All the wrestling on the show was shit, as was WCW at the time. The only passable match on the show was Vampiro and Finlay. This company made 2011 TNA look like the best wrestling in the world. Shows like this make me glad WCW died. This show gets a negative 5,000 out of 10. One of the worst shows in all of pay-per-view history, not just wrestling. Thank you for gems like this. He thanks Vince Russo, but it wasn't Vince's fault. Wow, one of the worst pay-per-views, not just wrestling. So every B-movie that's ever been released on pay-per-view, every Jerry Springer special that's been released on pay-per-view, this was one of the worst.
Yes. Paul Grinke, my favorite quote of the night from the commentators, quote, "Let's go to Gene Okerlund in the backstage area with Bam Bam Bigelow. That's how you fill some time," yeah. End quote. Even the commentators thought this pay-per-view was a waste of time.
I thought that was more of a joke of Shivani.
Everything was a joke.
Shivani claiming his skills as a broadcaster and filling that little segment. But, yeah. Chris Lovett, why did the announcers yell catfight when Hoovy and Paisley fought in the opener? What the hell was Terry Funk doing with the chicken? I have a nostalgia for this time period in wrestling, but I watch stuff like this and it goes away. Also, who brings an elect George W. Bush placard to a wrestling show? Shows the level of fan WCW was drawing at this time.
Well, in fairness, this was in Florida. This was Jeb Bush territory.
That is correct.
All right, let's finish off with James Starkey. I started watching this an hour ago, so if I don't comment further, I've given up watching it. Highlights so far, the wall gimmick. First Bam Bam charging down the ring shouting, "I've had enough of you, wall," and the commentators repeating the name over and over. Side headlock by the wall. Reverse Irish whip by the wall. It reminds me of when Pollock does play-by-play recaps and keeps having to say these absurd names. I remember one specifically from the Women of Wrestling show, and then a crossbody by Randy Rara for the win. It'll stay with me forever. And then a few minutes later, he updated, new highlight, Vampiro saying, "I got Fit Finlay coming in my face."
Oh, right.
A mistaken use of words by Vampiro. Well, that was unanimous with the feedback.
Most people either not finishing this show or just having a terrible, terrible time as a result of trying to finish this show.
Do you think there were people 12 years ago that the day after this pay-per-view aired, people were getting on others saying, "Why are you so negative? Just enjoy it. Just enjoy it.
Boy.
It's wrestling."
There had to have been. There had to have been this. By the way, this pay-per-view drew a 0.13 buy rate at this time, which was, I guess, one of the worst in their history. And of those people, I'm sure some of those were able to defend it.
This is good stuff, guy. Just enjoy it. I hate that excuse. Just enjoy it.
Just turn your brain off.
Yeah. WCW is a great company. You just wait where they'll be in a couple years. They're going to rebound.
Anyway.
Just enjoy it. Let things play out. All right. So that brings us to an end of our WCW Uncensored 2000 chat, an event that will likely never, ever be referenced on this show again for good reason. Because for the next month, we're going to focus on WrestleMania, mm-hmm. heading into the 28th installment of WrestleMania on April the 1st. And we put up our poll on... that was me using bad words there.
Huh.
That can be taken out of context. We conducted a poll on the Review Away Facebook group. Let you guys pick which WrestleManias you would like us to review. And the way we're going to do it this year is that we're going to do two WrestleManias, and we're going to do the go-home Raw for each WrestleMania, for each one. So the top two vote-getters were WrestleMania 2000 and WrestleMania 20 from 2004, which featured Brock Lesnar, Bill Goldberg, Kurt Angle, Eddie Guerrero, Victoria, and Molly in a head-shaving match. Lots of stuff on both shows to review.
That's a very stacked card.
Yes, it is. So next week, we will review the March 27th, 2000 edition of Raw, heading into WrestleMania 2000. And
how appropriate. That's like that's just like 2 weeks after this uncensored pay-per-view.
You're right. You're right. Totally. What a contrast we'll have of wrestling products from March of 2000. Mm. So that's coming up. And then the following week, we'll do WrestleMania 2000, then Raw 2004, and finish off with WrestleMania 20 to highlight WrestleMania month here on Review Away. So that's going to end things off. And as always, you can leave your feedback and check out stuff at reviewaway.com, liveaudiowrestling.com. We will be back on Friday with Review and Impact alongside Nate Milton and lots of stuff coming your way. So head over to all of those fine outlets where you can leave your opinions. Wade, do you have a song that can accurately do justice to Uncensored 2000? Something that is the musical equivalent of the 2000 version of Uncensored.
Well, if there's one thing to be grateful for from this pay-per-view, it is the one, I guess, internet wrestling community meme that still exists to this day. And that is, of course, the Yappa Pie promo. And what better way to end us off than Hulk Hogan's Apple Pie rap song?
Apple pie.